Rafaela.
Rafaela's mother's expression hovered between anxiety and annoyance. She blinked. Her mind had drifted again, and the direction it had drifted did no one any good, and would infuriate her mother if she knew.
Yes.
You're thinking about that boy.
It was entirely unfair that mothers could, breaking all physical laws, practice telepathy.
He's not a boy.
You agreed.
Rafa pushed away the untouched breakfast, which had no doubt given her mother the evidence needed, and stared out the long windows at the formal garden with its glittering statuary.
I agreed to break the engagement. I agreed not to marry him secretly. I did not agree never to think of him again. It would have been a ridiculous agreement.
Her mother looked pointedly at the congealed remains of an omelet and then at Rafa.
Well, it will do you no good to starve yourself.
Rafa lifted her arms, demonstrating the snug fit of the velvet tunic that had been loose several weeks before.
Hardly.
Still.
Parents never quit.
Rafa wondered if she would have the energy for that when she was a parent herself, assuming she became one. She supposed she would, eventually. If Ronnie came back, and his parents quit quarreling with her parents and so on. In the meantime, she was supposed to look busy and happy. Busy she could manage. She stood up.
I've got to get to the board meeting. Remember that Aunt Marta asked me to keep an eye on her subsidiaries for her.
You don't have to go in every day, Rafaela.
But I'm learning.
That was true. She had known vaguely what sorts of holdings her family had understood that whenever certain products changed hands, money flowed into the family coffers. But she had paid far more attention to what she spent her allowance on than where it came from.
It's actually kind of interesting.
I should hope so. I just meant you have plenty of time to learn.
You used to say when I was your age I was running the Leinster Elements single-handed.
Yes, but that was before, when everyone knew Rejuve was a one-time thing. Now you have plenty of time, as much as you want.
And parents would live forever, the most effective glass ceiling of all. She would have Rejuve herself when the time came, but she didn't look forward to a long, long lifetime of being the good daughter.
We might get tired of running things. You'll have your turn, and it won't be as far ahead as you fear.
Rafa didn't argue. She remembered the island adventure. She had been scared. She had killed someone. She had nearly died. She had done well enough, but she wouldn't have chosen that way to maturity, if what she had now was maturity. Brunn had wanted to be an adventurer. At least, that's what she'd said. All those years as a practical joker, a fluffhead party girl, had she really changed? Rafa had always been the quiet one of the bunch, the one who got the drunks to bed, the injured to the clinic, the doors relocked and the evidence hidden. She had imagined herself moving happily into an ordinary adult life. Ordinary rich adult life, she reminded herself. She liked privilege and comfort. She had no overwhelming desire to test herself. But now, Rafa looked at the serious face in the mirror and wondered why she was bothering. Brunn, yes. Not only her wildness, but her family's flair, if that's what you wanted to call it. Her own family had had no flair, not for generations. Her parents had always told her that steady, hard work made its own luck. But then there was Ronnie. Logic had nothing to do with that. She loved him. Word had spread that she and Ronnie were no longer an item. She suspected her mother, but it was not something they could discuss, not now. She had expected to hear about Ronnie from George Mahoney, who gossiped freely about everyone, no matter which side of a political divide you or they were on. But George had disappeared from social functions at the same time as Ronnie. No one seemed to know where they were, and Rafa couldn't ask pointed questions without brows being raised and word getting back to her mother. She was delighted, therefore, to get a call from George's father, Kevil, who asked her to meet with him and Lord Thornbuckle. She had not been in the council complex since the king's resignation, but she had grown up hearing about Kevil and Bunny, contemporaries of her parents, long before she had realized that they were important people. Now, as they settled her in a comfortable leather chair and offered her something to drink, she felt oddly like an adult and a child at the same time. Rafa accepted Lord Thornbuckle's offer of coffee, but refused thinly sliced nut bread.
Ronnie and George went on a mission for us.
Rafa clenched her hand on the saucer and set it down before it shook and rattled the cup.
We thought they'd help each other.
Rafa held her tongue. No use arguing with a lawyer of Kevil Mahoney's class.
It may have been a mistake. We thought of asking another of their friends, someone from the Royal Aerospace Service, but things are rather delicate at the moment.
Delicate?
The two men looked at each other. Rafa felt like screaming, but didn't. What good would it do?
They've disappeared, and we don't know whom we can trust in the old administration. We don't know if the reason they've disappeared has something to do with their mission, with something else entirely, or with communications failures. There've been problems recently, as I'm sure you're aware.
Everyone was. The interruption of commercial transfers, even for so brief a period, had panicked the public.
At the moment, we're dealing with a crisis. More than one, in fact, though you don't need to know all of them. We can't go. We need the information we sent them to get, and we need to know what happened to them. If we send more young men, especially those who've been in the military, it will be noticed in the wrong way.
You want me to go?
Neither of them met her eyes at first. Rafa felt her temper rising. This was ridiculous. They didn't live back on old Earth in prehistoric times.
You want me to find Ronnie or George? And you think who's ever up to mischief will believe I'm chasing after Ronnie because of romance?
That was the idea.
Rafa let herself glare at him.
It's ridiculous. It's out of a story cube or something. Lovesick girl goes harrying after a handsome young man in need of rescue. What do you want me to do? Wear a silver bodysuit and carry some impressive-looking weapon?
Even as she said it, she realized she would look stunning in a silver bodysuit, and she imagined herself carrying one of the rifles from the island. No, it was still ridiculous. Kevil Mahoney peered at his fingertips as if they had microprint on them.
People do sometimes do ridiculous, illogical things, even for love.
Not me. I'm the sensible one.
It sounded priggish, said like that in this quiet room. Rafa opened her mouth to tell Lord Thornbuckle about the times she'd saved Brunn from official retribution and shut it again. That was the past and didn't matter.
Where?
The Guerni Republic. Some planet called Music.
It would be.
Rafa felt trapped, on the one hand, and on the other there was a suspiciously happy flutter in her chest.
I'll go.
Quickly, before she thought about it. Because underneath it all, she wanted to go. She wanted a chance to get away from her mother, away from everyone, and think. And she wanted to see Ronnie alone, very far away, and make up her own mind.
Traveling alone on a major liner is not an adventure.
It was nothing like Brunn's mad dash across space, working in the depths of livestock freighters and what all. She didn't want that anyway. She ate exquisitely prepared meals in the first-class dining room, worked out in the first-class gymnasium, flirted appropriately with the younger stewards, and pushed away the occasional desire to measure herself against Brunn. She pored over the tourist information on the Guerni Republic. Her Aunt Marta's holdings included small interests in several Guernesi corporations, inherited through marriage a couple of generations back. Rafa was surprised to find that one of them had its corporate headquarters on Music. Handy, but odd. She could reasonably visit, as the near relative of a stockholder from the Familius. She composed a short message and put it in the mail queue. Rafa settled into her rooms at the hotel her travel agent had recommended. She had no idea where Ronnie and George would be staying, but it shouldn't be too hard to find out. The traveler's directory listed visitors by homeworld. The Familia's Regnant section had more names than she had expected, and for a moment she let herself wonder what Venezia Glendower Moraline Sevatagos was doing there. Rafa had been at school with one of her nieces. She hadn't thought about Otala Moraline for a couple of years at least.
Never mind all that. Where's Ronnie?
She found his name, finally, listed as traveling rather than at a fixed address. Communications could be left with the traveler's directory, the listing said.
Great. Ronnie and George have run off somewhere for a little unauthorized fun, and I have no idea when they'll be back.
She felt angry and was annoyed with herself. They didn't know she was coming. It wasn't deliberate. Perhaps a good meal would help. She called up the hotel directory and decided on the smallest of the dining rooms, described as quiet, intimate, and refined, yet casual. The Guarnesi definition of quiet, intimate, refined, and casual had tables set into mirrored alcoves. Each alcove was divided from the main room by an arch of greenery, from which graceful sprays of fragrant orchids swayed. Once ensconced in her alcove, Rafa discovered that the mirrors reflected only the greenery and the delicate curves of the chandelier, not the diners. She glanced casually into other alcoves just to check, and wondered briefly how the mirrors worked. She had worked her way through most of her meal when someone passed by in a flamboyant trail of scarlet ruffles that caught her eye. A tall, black-haired woman whose walk expressed absolute confidence in her ability to attract attention. The red dress left the elegant line of her back to no one's imagination, and a drip of diamonds down her spine only emphasized its perfection. Two men in formal dress followed her, one tall with a mane of red hair, and the other short and stout. Rafa leaned forward, excited despite herself. It had to be Madame Moran, who had toured in the Familius Regnant, though she lived here. She had seen the famous diva hardly an arm's length away. She would check the entertainment listings. Perhaps there would be a performance while she was here. She hoped it would be Gertrude and Lyda, but she would happily listen to Moran sing a grocery list. She glanced around the tables she could see. And there he was. The last person she had expected to see was the Familius's former king. But there he sat, spooning up the cold fish soup as if he were at home back on Castle Rock. Rafa blinked and looked down at her own meal. It couldn't be the king. Former king. Former chair of the Grand Council. Wherever he was, he wouldn't be here in the Guerni Republic. Rumor had it that his wife had moved out after his resignation and returned to her family's estates. Everyone had said he was helping with administrative matters. She blinked, but the shape of his face, the way of holding the spoon, did not change. He paused, pressed his hands to his temples a moment, in a gesture she had known from childhood. It had to be the king. It could not be the king. She lingered over dessert, sneaking furtive glances at the man now placidly working his way through some kind of meat wrapped in pastry. It still looked like the king. Her parents' age or a little older, but that was hard to tell after a rejuve or so. He held himself like someone used to being served. Anyone would who stayed in this hotel and ate in this dining room. He ate quickly, neatly, and refused dessert with a gesture. When he rose and turned to leave, Rafa looked down, wondered why she didn't smile and greet him. It was the king. It could not be the king. She would go to bed and think about it tomorrow. The next morning, the directory reported no response from Ronnie or George. Rafa delivered the samples Lord Thornbuckle had given her to the Neurosciences Institute. Then she took a tour of the city's botanic gardens and discovered that the orchids in the hotel dining room were only one of 5,492 species cultivated on Music. The guide explained more about orchids than anyone on the tour wanted to know and seemed to think tourists were responsible for the unwanted information.
And how many species have been adapted for the production of neuroactive chemicals?
No one could answer, and the guide pouted. Rafa looked at the available tours for that afternoon and decided to stay in. Traveling alone with the intent to have no adventures continued to be more boring than Rafa had expected. After 3 days of sensible sightseeing with no word from Ronnie and George, she was ready for a change. She was used to having someone to keep out of trouble, which also meant someone to talk to. She had seen the ex-king, and she had no one to tell. Even her mother would be preferable to this empty room with its bland blue, gray, and beige color scheme. It didn't make her feel rested and sleepy. It made her feel like going out to find some color and excitement. Color and excitement, as the tourist brochures made clear, could be found in the old city, which was actually newer than the new city, but had been rebuilt to look older. Rafa had found this sort of reasoning on other planets, where war or economic clearances had suggested the profitability of nostalgia. She headed for the old city after a discussion with the concierge, who agreed that it was safe at this early hour of the evening. The new city became the old city at a dramatic arch. Beyond, the street itself narrowed, but expanded in irregular bays to each side, marked off by changes in paving, colorful plants in decorative tubs, and even the occasional row of formerly clipped trees. Most of the color and excitement aimed at tourists involved displays of Guarnesi dancing to music from antique instruments. From somewhere down the street, a curl of saxophone lured her on. She almost recognized the melody, but she couldn't put a name to it. It came, she discovered, from an open door, not a courtyard. Inside, tables crowded around a low stage. She saw the saxophone player, instrument tucked under his arm, leaning over to talk to another musician with a guitar on his lap. Two more guitarists were stretching as they chatted.
Madam?
When she smiled and nodded, the waiter led her to a table halfway between stage and wall. She set her elbows on the table and peered at the napkin, which suggested in four languages that the appropriate tip was 20%. She glanced around, suddenly uncomfortable for no reason she could define, and it hit her. At least half of those watching came in pairs, triplets, quads, all identical. Most of the identicals were pairs, twins. But a few tables away, four identical blonde women chatted with three identical blonde men. And when Rafa took a second look, she realized that the men and women were, but for differences in hairstyle, dress, and cleavage, identical with each other. Seven faces alike. She shivered. These must be clones. She had heard of them, but never seen them. They were illegal in the Familia space. She knew that much. She looked at the musicians more closely. Were they all clones? They didn't look as much alike as the seven blondes, but there was a family resemblance, even in the fifth player. Rafa tried to tell herself that it was just a matter of different customs. There was nothing wrong with clones, and she wasn't in danger or anything. And she liked the music. When the music ended, Rafa found herself wondering where clone designers found their patterns. That man she had been so sure was the ex-king, for instance. Could that have been a clone, perhaps? Surely a neighboring government wouldn't make clones of its neighbor's political leaders. Or would it? Speculation bothered her. She didn't want to wonder about that or anything else. She had an appointment at the corporate headquarters of Atot Veal the next day. The structure was built into a slope, and the stairs offered open-air communication from level to level. Rafa followed the markers set alight by the button that had come with her appointment notice. The young woman who met her at the reception area seemed to find Rafa's presence entirely understandable.
We'll take you on the usual tour, and then you tell me what else you'd like to see. Your aunt's never visited us herself, but we understood that was for health reasons.
I'm so sorry. I wouldn't know.
Of course you can't tell us. We've established no need to know. But if it is health, you might want to investigate the medical facilities. Recently, one of your prominent citizens benefited from the expertise of the Neurosciences Institute. I'm sure they'd give you references.
Lady Cecilia.
Oh, you know her. Good. We really do welcome stockholder participation, you see. And if your aunt could travel, we would very much enjoy the benefit of her expertise.
Rafa wondered. Aunt Marta's expertise, as far as she had known, consisted of an instinctive grasp of what to sell and what to buy. She had never involved herself with management, preferring to live in relaxed comfort, pursuing her hobbies. Now she followed the young woman along gleaming corridors, wishing she had the foggiest notions what questions to ask. By the time she'd had the usual tour and collected an armful of glossy brochures, she was ready to quit for the day.
But you'll come again, I hope. Your aunt's is one of the few licensed facilities using our process.
Rafa still wasn't sure what process, but she knew she would have to find out. It would keep her mind off Ronnie. She had not seen the man who resembled the king for days. She had not forgotten him, but he was no longer part of her anticipation. But the next morning he appeared again, striding along the carpeted corridor toward the lobby with the firm stride of someone who knows where he's going. Rafa put down the story cube she had just picked up and watched him. He paused by the concierge's desk, then headed for the doors. Inexplicably, Rafa felt drawn to follow and darted through the gift shop door. The man had already disappeared through the front doors. Rafa stretched her legs and followed. There he was, outside, chatting with the doorman, waiting for a car, no doubt. One of the sleek electric cabs pulled up, and he got in. Rafa waited until it began to move, then went out to the street. The cab moved smoothly away.
You can't keep us here forever. Eventually someone will come looking, and you'll have accomplished just what you want to avoid. People who are likely to know you by sight on your trail.
The clone on guard looked at him with an unfriendly stare.
It won't help you.
But why are you angry with us?
Remember the commissioning banquet?
Oh, surely you don't hold that against me. I thought you were him, the prince, I mean.
I know who you mean. Why does that matter? You were willing to do that.
Everyone gets drunk at the commissioning banquet.
George glanced at Ronnie for support. Ronnie lay back on the bed, eyes shut, but George was sure he wasn't asleep. He couldn't possibly sleep so much.
And after. And the pranks are all traditional.
Are you going to try to convince me you drew my name, excuse me, his name, from a hat?
The clone made a display of cleaning his fingernails with the stiletto. George thought about lying. How could the clone know the name he had really drawn? At last, he chose honesty for no reason he could name.
No. I drew someone else's, but I thought I had a grudge.
Have you ever been glued into your underwear?
As a matter of fact, yes. At camp one summer when I was 12. Ronnie and I both.
They were trying to toughen us up, they said. They'd found out that I liked the wrong kind of music, that I even played music.
Ronnie opened his eyes, and a slow grin spread across his face.
They glued us back to back. We must have looked really silly. Took video cubes, the whole thing. The counselors finally trashed the cubes, after they'd watched them and snickered for a day or so. George and I spent the time in the infirmary, growing new skin.
Oh, we weren't active then.
That's why I diluted the mix. You weren't nearly as stuck as I was.
What did you do to them?
Nothing. Really?
Ronnie had closed his eyes again. George admired the tone he achieved and waited. Let Ronnie tell it.
There was another boy, not even an RE, but smarter than all of us put together. He could bypass the read-only safety locks on entertainment cubes.
You trashed their cubes?
Not just that. We replaced their music with other things. Remember, George, how angry that cousin of mine was? Starvey Bellinville?
Yes, and Buttons, too. It was before his stuffy stage. He wasn't at all stuffy at 14.
Ronnie put a hand over his heart.
I blame myself. I think it was having to spend the next 3 weeks listening to an endless loop of all the pomp and circumstance marches. I should have put at least one waltz on that cube.
If you're trying to make it clear that you and George share a life I never knew except secondhand, you've succeeded. It doesn't make me like you better.
No, I can see that. But it's not our fault you're what you are. If we'd known, we might have made things easier for you. Or harder. Depends. We were all kids with kids' idiocies. Rich kids. We could be idiots longer than some. It wasn't until my aunt's new yacht captain straightened me out that I began to grow up.
Harris Serrano?
Yes. You met her. You understand.
Lady Cecilia had debated for several days where to go first after Zenebra. Harris left her to it. She had spent enough time thinking about horses. Now, as the yacht worked its way out of the crowded traffic patterns of Zenebra's system, she concentrated on the crew's training. Kutsudis worried her, especially in light of her aunt's message. No one but Levati knew what he could really accomplish with two bent pins and a discarded chip. An undetectable hyperlight tight-beam comlink, for instance. Cecilia's concern that she could not see clearly where fleet personnel were concerned warred in her mind with her aunt's trust in her judgment. She would like to believe her aunt, but if she did that, she might as well believe her aunt on everything. Her mind shied away from the implications, like a green horse from a spooky fence. And that image brought her back to Cecilia.
Inspection. It's more than time for an inspection.
Harris checked the set of her uniform before she headed down the passage to crew quarters. As she would have anticipated, the ex-military crew kept their quarters tidy, almost bare of personal identity. The programmable displays that other crew left showing tropical reefs, mountain valleys, or other scenery had been blanked. Harris continued into the working areas of the ship. The new inspection stickers, real ones, not fakes, made bright patches on the gleaming bulkheads. She checked every readout, every telltale, the routine soothing her mind. Even the memories of violence on the ship. Here, Ickland had died from hydrogen sulfide poisoning, and down this passage, his distant relative, Skoderin, had nearly killed Brig Serkin and Lady Cecilia. Redecoration had removed any trace of corrosive gases, of blood. The memory of faces and bodies that floated along with her were no different from those that haunted any captain's days. In the Ponix sections, she found Bruin replanting trays, a dirty job that always fell to the lowest level mole.
What are you growing this round?
Hallow beets. I hadn't realized how much sulfur uptake ship Ponix need.
There's a ship rhyme about it. Eat it, excrete it, then hallow beet it. And it's always confused me that we call the sulfur-sucking beets hallow beets. You'd think they sopped up the halocarbons, but they don't. How are you getting along with Lady Cecilia's gardener?
Lady Cecilia's gardener produced the ship's fresh vegetables. Ship's crew produced only the vegetation needed to normalize the atmosphere.
I think he worries I'll steal his methods for Dad's staff. You know I'm supposed to check the oxygen carbon dioxide levels on his compartments. But he hovers over me as though I were after industrial secrets.
Are you telling me you're never tempted to sneak a tomato?
Well, perhaps.
Harris left Brunn to the tedious work and continued her inspection. She was not surprised to find Arkady Janice on his own tour of inspection, checking the weapons controls interlocks. The yacht had once had spacious storage bays, far larger than it needed for the transportation of a single passenger. Now those bays were stuffed with weaponry and its supporting control and guidance systems, with the jamming and other countermeasures that Harris hoped would serve as well as shields if someone were shooting back. They had not had the volume to mount both effective weapons and strong shields. Harris hoped she'd made the right choice.
All's well, Captain. I did want to ask you, Kutsuda says there's a new wrinkle in ECM that we could probably rig onto what we have if you wanted.
Do you understand it? Does it make sense to you?
Yes. It's a reasonable extension of the technology. I don't see why it wouldn't work.
And how do you feel about Kutsudis?
Janice looked around.
Well...
Of course, he may have ears everywhere. Better to hear the truth, Arkady. He's smart. He has to know we don't completely trust someone from the body. How do you feel?
I like him more than I thought I would. He's like all Scantechs, clever and sneaky. But he doesn't give me that bad feeling. Then again, I missed Skoderin.
So did we all. But I think all our sensitivities are flapping in the breeze now. Let's go on and make that change. Send my desk a complete description and I'll file it. If anything comes up...
Of course, Captain.
Janice looked happier, and Harris went on to complete her inspection. By the time she reached the bridge again, Lady Cecilia had sent a message. She had chosen their destination... A planet called Xavier. Serkin already had the charts up on display for Harris with a recommended course.
Looks good so far. I'll want to check. Some of those intermediate jump points may have restriction codes on them.
Yes, ma'am, they do. Four of them are heavy traffic. We'd have to file here before we jump for clearance through them. Xavier itself is in the frontier zone. We have to file with the RSS a letter of intent. I've done a preliminary file, in case, and there's an alternate course that doesn't use any restricted jump points. Though it will add 16 days.
16 additional days, times the daily requirements for food, water, oxygen. Harris ran the numbers in her mind before checking them on the computer.
We can do it, but it's already a long trip, especially counting the long in-system drop at Xavier. You're right, Serkin. That short course is the best. What's the maximum flux transit you've plotted?
That, too, was within acceptable limits. Harris reminded herself again that Sirkin had not made the mistakes she'd been blamed for. On her own, she had always done superb work.
Fine. Complete that application for the restricted jump points, file the letter of intent as agricultural products purchase, wholesale, and tell me when you anticipate we'll start the sequence. Good work.
It was, too. Most navigators would still be setting up a single course.
Thank you, ma'am.
Sirkin might have been her old self, the bright, vibrant girl Harris had first met, but there was still the wariness of old injuries in her eyes. That was maturity, Harris told herself, and nothing to regret. Nobody stayed as young as Sirkin had been, and lived to grow old. Xavier, when they arrived at its orbital station, looked like the uncrowded agricultural world it was. Its main export was genetic variability for large domestic animals to inbred in other populations. A variety of habitats and temperature ranges allowed relatively easy culture of equids, bovids, and less common domestics for many purposes. Cecilia had been there before. She knew most of the horse breeders and planned to spend several weeks with those most likely to have what she wanted.
Captain Serrano, could I speak to you on a secure line, please?
That request got through. Harris had been wondering how long exactly Cecilia meant to stay and what the daily docking charges would run to. Some of these outworld stations tried to squeeze every visitor because they had so few.
Of course.
I'm the station master. I've been authorized to ask this, and if it's an offense, please excuse me. But are you related to the, fleet, Serranos?
Yes, I am. In fact, I was fleet myself.
That's what we hoped. Lady Cecilia said, but I had to make sure.
Why?
We really need your help, Captain Serrano. Your expertise, if you will. I've been authorized to invite you to a briefing with our senior captain, Vasilos, who commands the planetary defense.
Harris felt a prickle run down her backbone. She would have Kutsudas for lunch if they had dropped into a shooting war without his noticing.
Planetary defense? Is there a problem?
Not now, Captain. At the moment. But if you would come, if you would consider helping... Just advice, I mean. You don't have a warship, we know that.
Harris paused, considering her answer. Behind her, she heard a stir and glanced around. Cecilia.
I told them you'd be glad to help.
Harris glared at her, then turned back to the screen.
I'll attend a briefing. At this point, without knowing what you want... My responsibilities to my ship must, you understand, take precedence.
Oh, of course. When you're ready, there will be a shuttle at your disposal. I'll just tell Captain Vasilos.
Harris turned back to Cecilia.
Just what did you think you were doing?
I didn't see any harm in it. They asked about your name. I told them you were ex-fleet. They started babbling about some kind of problem and needing expert guidance. You don't mind, do you?
Mind was not the right word. On the shuttle down, Harris read through the scanty briefing material she'd been handed and tried to explain to Cecilia why she should stick to horses and leave defense to the military.
I know that. That's why I said you should take care of it, whatever it is. I know it's your specialty.
Used to be my specialty. You were the one who pointed out so firmly that I am a civilian now.
I know.
For an instant, Cecilia's expression might even have been contrite. Or as close as that arrogant, bony face ever came. They rode the rest of the way in unrestful silence. The little military band in its bright uniforms, buttons and ornaments glittering, played some jaunty tune which Harris could have sworn she knew. Across the sunburnt grass, the music practically strutted, as if the notes themselves were proud.
It's charming!
Under the clear blue sky of Xavier, Cecilia's cheeks were flushed.
It's ridiculous. If this is their protection...
But it's so... It makes me feel good.
That's what it's for, but feeling good because you've got a decent bandmaster won't save your life if you don't have some armament, and I don't see anything here that could take care of a good-sized riot.
Maybe they don't have riots.
Someone left the group to approach them.
Lady Cecilia, Captain Serrano. I'm Senior Captain Vasilos. Thank you for your willingness to help.
You're very welcome.
Harris nodded and waited to see what would come next.
I presume you'd like to know more about the problem?
Yes.
Well, if you'll come this way, then.
He led them to a brightly polished ground car with a big boxy rear end and a little open cab for the driver. Harris had never seen anything like it. She and Cecilia and Senior Captain Vasilos sat in back on tufted velvet. The compartment would have held four or five more in comfort.
"We've had trouble from the Compassionate Hand from time to time, as you know, m'lady."
He turned to Cecilia, who nodded.
"But we don't believe these are the same people. For one thing, the survivors report nothing like the discipline we associate with the Compassionate Hand raids. For another, the entry vectors are all wrong. Now, I know the Black Scratch could be using a roundabout jump sequence, but they'd almost have to trail past an RSS picket line that way. And Fleet keeps telling us there's nothing in the records, any of them. Of course, now they think we're overreacting. At least that's the message I've had from them. They're stretched thin on this frontier."
On all. And would be thinner yet if the government fell. Harris hoped fervently that Lord Thornbuckle would cobble something together before that happened.
"We used to get a patrol ship in here at least yearly. That kept the vermin away, but in the past 8 years or so, it's been less than that. In the past 2 years, we haven't had a patrol closer than Margate."
Margate, 2 stars away. That wouldn't help.
"Frankly, I don't know why the Compassionate Hand hasn't been at us again."
Harris thought they had, but were being circumspect, just in case the lack of patrol activity was a trap.
"Has anyone ever gotten an ID on the raiders?"
Vasilos loaded the cube reader and began pointing to items in the display.
"Here. Last time, they knocked out the scanners and the records at the orbital station. But a farmer down here in the south happened to catch a bit. His oldest daughter's crazy for space and hand-built the scanner of her own. But it was at the extreme of her range, and we don't know how valid the data are."
"We'll have our expert look at it, if you don't mind."
"No, that's fine. If you can make anything of it, so much the better."
They had better make something of it. After a look at the files, Harris realized that a farmer's brat's homemade scanner had the only possible data of any importance.
"What sort of defense do you have?"
"Well, it's always been Fleet policy that planets didn't need their own heavy ships, as you know."
Harris nodded. It was always easier to keep the peace if the peaceful weren't too well armed.
"We did have 2 Demoiselle-class escorts 40 years ago, but one of them was badly damaged in a Compassionate Hand raid, and we cannibalized her to get parts for the other."
The Demoiselle-class had been obsolete for decades. It mounted no more weaponry than the yacht, and handled worse. Designed initially to protect commercial haulers from incompetent piracy and the crowded conditions of the Cleonic moons, it had been someone's poor choice for a situation like this.
"And your remaining ship?"
"Well, not really operational, and we don't have the expertise locally to fix it, nor the money to send it somewhere else. I know that must sound like we want to be sitting ducks, but it's not really that. We keep Grogan hanging around with her weapons lid up, hoping to scare off trouble, but the pirates have figured out she has neither legs nor teeth."
"What's the problem?"
"She was underpowered to start with, and she needs her tubes relined at a minimum. She makes only 70% of the acceleration she had when she came, but there's no shipyard nearer than Grand Junction or Tefal, and the cost..."
"Let me see if my engineers can suggest something."
Harris made a note on her compad. She had to have something as backup, if it were only a shuttle with a single missile tube and a lot of electronic fakery. If this Grogan could move in space at all, it was better than nothing.
"Anything else?"
"We did have a fixed orbital battery, but they got that one on the last raid, then one of the shuttles."
There were only 3, as Harris already knew.
"We took 2 of the phase cannons off the other escort."
"They mounted phase cannon in a shuttle?"
"Have you ever fired them?"
"Not yet, but we think it will work."
"I think perhaps my engineers should take a look."
"Of course, Captain Serrano. Does this mean you'll take the commission?"
"Let me confer with my, staff. And if you have any engineering specs on those vessels..."
"Right away, Captain."
Kutsudis received the scan cassette with a curl of his lip that made Harris want to smack him. Oblo, she saw, had a sulky look. Fine. Let Oblo work it off on Kutsudis. An hour later, Kutsudis called her.
"Good data, Captain. The kid knew what she was doing, whoever she is. Recruiter."
Harris had already asked.
"Can't, I'm afraid. She died a year back of some local disease. What do you have?"
She didn't mention the younger sister she'd been told about, who seemed to have similar talents. Time enough for that later.
"Athar's world, but I think the ship ID's falsified. It'll be Athar's world just from the flavor of it, but not that number. It's in the commercial sequence, probably mid-sized trader. Too bad that girl didn't build a wideband detector as well.
I'll ask. Maybe she did. But only one ship?
So far. I'll let you know.
Harris put in a call to Petrus, who had gone to take a look at the cannon-loaded shuttle.
Just got here, but you were right. They assumed that only the mast mattered. They've got them bolted into the frame, the unreinforced frame, with homemade ports cut in the hull plates. Quite a job, really. They put some thought into it. Pity they didn't know more about phase cannon. To make this thing operational, we'll have to dismount them, reinforce, and remount. At best, that's 5 weeks of work with the equipment available.
Downside or orbital?
Downside. They've got no orbital facilities at all. Anyway, that'd give you a slow shuttle that could fire a couple of bolts every 5 minutes or so. Not worth it unless we're desperate.
That will depend on how bad the old escort is.
All along, Harris had wondered who crewed the two escorts. When she swam aboard the remaining Demoiselle, she found out. Anyone who wanted, it seemed. Oldsters retired from space, youngsters desperate to get above atmosphere, balancing a complete lack of proper training with intimate knowledge of their single ship.
Yeah, Grogan's not a bad ship. She takes a bit of easing along, that's all.
Petrus raised his brows, but said nothing. He'd explain later. Harris could see for herself most of its problems. Back with Captain Vasilos, Harris showed him the recommendations of her engineering staff.
Can you tell me why you think the raiders do?
It's more a guess than anything else. It's come twice before in our springtime, and now it's late spring. It feels like the right time.
Harris had heard worse reasons.
Those phase cannon in the shuttle can't be used as they are. And 5 weeks of downtime, if your planet-side yards can do the work, still give you only a very minimal weapons platform. If you have the resources to start that work, go ahead, but don't count on it to do much. I do have another suggestion.
Esteban Koutsoudis and Mahari bent over the displays.
It's a little thing, whatever it is. Let me just tinker a bit here.
He signaled Mahari with one stubby finger.
Yeah, that cube I had, put it in here.
Another screen came alive with numbers that scrolled so rapidly Harris couldn't see anything but lines. Then it froze, with one line highlighted.
Hull constructed at Jaeger, registered with Athar's world as a medium trader. But Athar's traders are everyone else's raiders.
That much any of her own crew could have gotten. But Koutsoudis wasn't through. The screen wavered and steadied on a new display. The other ship's design details, shown in three-dimensional display. Colored tags marked deviations from the listed criteria. Where Sweet Delight's other detectors merely showed blots of warning red for weapons on active status, this one showed the placement and support systems for weapons not otherwise detected as live.
Where'd you get this stuff?
Koutsoudis didn't take his eyes off the display.
Well, you know how it is. Bit of this, bit of that. It's not exactly standard, so I can't mount it in any fleet craft.
But you can't get that resolution that far away. Thermal distortion alone.
You need an almighty big database.
Koutsoudis tweaked the display again, and an enlarged view of the distant vessel's portside weapons appeared, with little numbered comments. He tapped the cube reader.
I've been sort of collecting this for a long time. Had to design new storage algorithms, too, and the transforms for the functions that do the actual work.
Magic.
That's it. Gotta have my secrets, don't I? If I teach you everything, who's gonna care about my neck?
Nobody cares about your neck now, Esteban. Other parts of you
are off limits. Besides, that ship's no good.
Can you tell what it's getting?
It won't have us now. Not with the last batch of little doodads Oblo and Mahari and I installed. We're in no danger, and we can sit here and read their mail if we want to.
Not and let them run amok in this system. Not if we can stop them, that is.
Oh, we can stop them. Their weapons look impressive on scan, or will when they go active and light up the station's warning system. But this is old tech, slow, stupid stuff. Good for scaring the average civilian, though I bet they never take on any of the big commercial carriers. And when they refitted that hull with new engines, they made a big mistake.
He brought up a highlighted schematic, and Harris saw it herself. They'd wanted more performance, and they'd mounted more powerful drives, but without reinforcing the hull or mounts. If they used those engines flat out, they'd collapse either hull or mount. Even worse, they could do structural damage by combining a lower drive setting with missile firing.
I'd bet they'd never fired many shots in anger. At least not while under any significant acceleration. That's a beginner's mistake.
If only she had a real fleet warship, she'd simply chase them into their own fireball.
With any luck, they won't live long enough to learn better.
Not luck. Skill. Knowledge.
How long before you can strip the rest you want off them?
12 to 14 standard hours, Captain. With the captain's permission, I'll put one of the juniors on scan and plan to be on the bridge in 4 hours for a check. And then in 10 hours...
Of course. We use the fleet scheduling for this. First, give me your interim schedules and make sure you are off shift enough for real rest before then.
I don't know if we have the crew for that.
Not quite, but better than they have, I expect. As long as we don't let them get past us or get the first shot, we'll do very well.
After she had the schedules for the next 12 standard hours, Harris went to see Cecilia.
I don't know how that man does what he does, but we're damn lucky Lavati wanted me to run off with him. With my people, I'd have a lot less margin to play with.
So we're going to fight again?
Cecilia looked as if she were trying to project eagerness, but she would be remembering that other battle, in which she was trapped in her aged and disabled body, unable even to speak clearly. She had to be scared.
Yes, we'll fight, but it won't be anything like the time before. They won't have detected us, and they're unlikely to do so until we blow them away.
She used Cecilia's desk display to diagram what they intended to do.
It's not very sporting, is it?
It's not sporting at all. It's not a game. Lupescu made that mistake. I don't. This is a band of ruffians who have terrorized this system repeatedly, and I'm going to destroy them. True, their homeworld may send more. I can't help that. But if Kutsudis is right, Athar's world may have more to worry about than a missing allied pirate. These people will have months, maybe years, of peace and a chance to develop their own effective defense. So yes, I'm going to destroy them with the least possible risk to us.
How can you be sure they're the right ones? What if you're about to blow up an innocent ship?
By the time we do it, we'll know what brand of toothpaste they use. Right now we know they are running with a falsified ID beacon, which doesn't necessarily mean criminal intent. We had one. But they've also got a whopping load of armament. And they're from Athar's world, which is always suspicious. About the only time those barbarians leave home, it's to cause trouble for someone. They fit the profile of the trouble your friends have been having.
With the enemy ship only a light second away, Kutsudis continued to pour out a torrent of information about it.
Not only Athar's world, but one of the Brotherhood chiefs. Svenik the Bold, I think. Certainly he had this particular ship a while back, and this sort of raid is his specialty.
I'm surprised he's lasted this long with that hull-engine combination.
So am I. But he hasn't been up against anything that made him redline it. Yet. I know you want to do this the quick way, Captain, but I wish we could push him to it.
Not worth it. I know, it would be fun. But none of our friends can match our scan capability, and if we made a mistake, or he got lucky...
He's gone hot.
It's not us. He isn't side-scanning. That's just preparation for hitting the station. He should be transmitting his demands. Yes, there it goes.
Go ahead, Mr. Janice.
Harris felt that familiar sensation in her belly. Plan, and plan again. But at the moment, there was always one cold thrust of fear. Arkady and Mahari both touched their boards and their own displays lit. Now, if the raider were looking, they could be seen. The weapons boards flickered through the preparatory displays, then steadied on green, with the red row at the top showing all the weapons ready. They had the raider now, though he didn't know it and might not before he died. They had calculated their ideal moment to attack, but from here on, the conclusion wasn't really in doubt.
Screen's warm.
Their puny screens wouldn't deflect much, but better a little protection than none. Second by second, they closed.
Second scan. Jump insertion, low velocity. Preliminary says it's a medium-sized cargo hull. Weapons minimal.
It had always been a possibility that the raider would have a companion, or rival.
Kutsudis on the new one. Mahari, you take main scan on the raider. Janice?
Anytime, Captain.
It's hours out, and it's not in any hurry. Could be tramp cargo. I'm just getting the beacon ID, but the timing's suspicious.
That's why we have backup.
The station, as agreed, had rebroadcast that narrow-beam transmission in Omni, which allowed the Sweet Delight to pick it up, and enter it in the log for evidence. It was about what she'd expected, the wording varying only slightly from the previous raids.
Transmit our authorization.
Kutsudis grinned and hit another switch. Half a light second. The raiders should be startled to receive a transmission from a source they hadn't spotted, giving them official notification that they were unwanted and about to be fired upon. The question was, what would they do next?
There's Grogan, right on time.
The old escort had been given a special set of electronics and now lit up the scans as if she were studded with more armament than the yacht. Positioned as she was on the far side of the intruder's path, she limited its possible maneuvers. He would have to assume a coordinated attack plan.
Now.
Janice ran his thumb down the firing controls. The Sweet Delight shuddered at launch, even though the missiles were shoved out of the tubes at low velocity to light outside. Red to orange to yellow to green as the weapons reloaded automatically and the red row at the top reappeared. Meanwhile, Janice and Mahari tracked the launches.
5, 8, all lit.
Half a light second still left over 90,000 miles between the two vessels, though that distance was closing as the raider approached. Certainly it was enough time for them to maneuver, but which way? The raider should be worrying about the old escort. They should be wondering what other weapons she would launch.
Kutsudis, what's our friend up to?
Dumping V, with the lag still a safe distance out. Very interesting ID, Captain.
Yes?
In the FR registry is an independent hauler, crew-owned. But I've got a flag on her in the fleet database for suspicious activities, and a personal flag. She's been in the same system, but remote, during raids by Athar's World Pirates and the Jenica Gang. My guess is she's either a spotter or a paymaster, maybe both. Not in her own right, of course, but for someone else. My guess there is the Black Scratch. She claims to trade with Scholheim and Fiddick, and you know the Benignity has a strong presence there.
Agreed. Keep an eye on her, then. Arcadi?
Nothing. There. They've launched at us and kicked up another 10 G's acceleration. It's within our pattern, and I could stop their salvo with my bare hands, just about. Old stuff.
A rock in the head will kill you just as dead.
Yes, Captain. But Athar's prefers bang to finesse. Look at my scans.
Already, the Sweet Delight's elegant ECM had confused the enemy missiles. Harris would need to order no evasive maneuvers at all. She worried more about the old escort, with her novice crew and her faked signatures. If they fired anything much at her... But the raiders seemed intent on getting away.
A lot of screaming on their bridge. I can't understand their ugly language, but it's loud.
Let me...
Kutsuda switched back to that channel.
The captain cussing out his scan tech for not seeing us first. Someone's left the main speaker open. The station should be getting all this, too. Handy for court if we ever want to pursue it.
If there's any court to pursue it in.
The Sweet Delight's missiles carried guidance systems normally found only in military weaponry. Whatever ECM the pirate vessel had didn't affect them. On Kutsudis' enhanced scans, the missiles closed inexorably. Harris wondered if Svenik's ship had shields of any quality, or if he'd tried to outrun them. She almost hoped he would. If he redlined his ship and blew it himself, it wouldn't be her fault. That was thinking like a civilian, though. Kutsudis saw the inevitable an instant before any of the rest.
Got him!
Easiest kill I ever saw.
I don't trust it. What's the other one doing?
It'll be a while before they get it on their scans. They're still dumping. Ask me again in a couple of minutes.
Just tell me, Esteban.
Harris felt itchy all over. Like Oblo, she was almost irritated that it had been that easy. It felt unreal, like a training exercise. Something picked at her memory. The raider had been there before, that same raider, destroying things but doing less damage than such raiders could. So they'd expected the raider, and they'd gotten the raider, and all this time the second ship hung out there and watched.
Weapons off.
Mahari gave her a startled look but shut her board down.
Esteban, signal Grogan on tight beam. Shut down, as dark as possible.
You want me to put us back in hiding?
Not until there's a natural obstacle between us and that other ship. I think we just did something stupid.
Stupid?
We expected an Athar's World Raider, and that's what we got. The same Raider. Why?
Because the Blood Hoarder's stupid. They do things like that.
For a profit, yes. For honor, if you could figure out what they mean by it. But here, look. We were told they've had raiders several times, but they didn't actually blow the station.
They wanted to milk the cow, not kill it.
The Blood Horde always figure there's another cow down the road. I thought maybe. This is so far from their usual range. They were just skimming on the way home from something else. But suppose they weren't. And suppose they weren't on their own business.
The Black Scratch. Hired him, maybe, or offered Svenik backing against Kjellik. That might do it. Send him in on feints at irregular intervals, see what happens. Likely, Svenik didn't know he had a trailer.
Right. And nothing much happens once, twice, and then we show up out of nowhere and sparkle all over their scans with stuff no civilian vessel could have. Blow Svenik without a scratch on us. No contest.
Harris wished she had the faintest idea where the nearest fleet communications node was.
He's boosting. Must have just caught the fight, and he's not wasting time. Wonder why he doesn't just jump. He's far enough from anything massive.
Harris felt little cold prickles down her back.
Anything we know about. No, most likely he wants to see what we'll do. If he can get us into a chase. Let's pretend we don't see him. Suck all you can, but don't react.
And we're not going back on the stealth gear because you hope they'll think we popped out from behind a rock?
I think they'll wonder. We're small and it's a messy system. It wouldn't take a big rock to hide us. If we went back in the sack now, they'd know for sure there was a ship with that capacity.
The distant ship vanished into FTL 6 hours later. Harris trusted Kutsudis' scans enough to return to the orbital station then and confer with the Xavierans. They were, she thought, entirely too jubilant and in no mood for warnings.
We want to honor you.
There's nothing to honor yet. You may well have worse trouble coming.
You must understand, Captain Serrano, this is the first time in years that we've been able to resist successfully. I shouldn't even say we, since you did it, but we must celebrate this victory. It will put heart in the troops.
They mean it. Remember that band? That's how they are. You must let them celebrate.
Very well. But I'm still worried. I would very much like to have a serious discussion.
Oh, of course, Captain Serrano. The General Secretary wants to meet you. The entire government wishes to thank you. After the parade.
Harris tried not to let her eyes roll up at this. Cecilia, out of pickup range, was grinning at her wickedly.
And just a few speeches, nothing really fancy.
She could just imagine. As it happened, she couldn't have imagined.
Aren't you glad I taught you to ride?
Cecilia sat the stocky white horse with the flowing mane as if she'd grown out of its back. After the first block, Harris had had enough of the rhythmic bouncing trot of her matching white horse. So it was in time to the music, so her legs hurt. She knew she didn't look as good as Cecilia. She was sure her uniform jacket over riding breeches looked particularly silly. Hard to believe that real soldiers had once ridden into battle.
I'm glad this is a small city. I bounce too much.
Open your joints and relax. This is fun.
Harris would rather have celebrated victory by floating for a few hours in some body of warm water. But duty was duty. By the time they arrived at the site of the celebration, Harris wondered if she'd ever get off the horse without help. Cecilia wasn't sympathetic.
I told you to spend more hours on the simulator.
I had other things to do.
It wasn't an excuse Harris would have accepted from anyone else, but she still couldn't see that riding horses was a necessary skill for a ship captain.
Captain?
That was a young man in the colorful uniform of the Civil Guard. Harris managed to dismount without either groaning or kicking him in the head. She was going to be more than sore for a few days. Cecilia, already down, looked eager and happy. Harris moved over to stand beside her. She had no idea what this world would consider an appropriate celebration, certainly not what might come after a parade on horseback. Despite herself, she felt a prickle of excitement run up her spine.
Up here, Captain!
Up here was atop a stone platform that resembled every reviewing stand she had ever seen, except its being solid stone instead of slightly quivery metal and plastic. Rows of chairs, each with a bright blue cushion on it, that was different, and a little railing painted brilliant white. Behind the chairs, the flags of Armitage, Xavier, Rouault, and the Familius Regnant swung gently in the light breeze. In front of them, the wide field where the parade was coming apart into its constituent elements. Some of them reformed into obvious military units, and some, the children on ponies, milled around until the Civil Guard shooed them away.
I'm sorry for the delay. We wanted to get everyone here.
Quite all right.
But here they are.
A horse-drawn vehicle rolled across the field.
The General Secretary, the Mayor and Council. I hope it accords with your etiquette. In ours, the greater honor goes to the one who arrives first.
The escort stood, and Harris took the hint. The General Secretary, resplendent in a long cape edged with silver braid, bowed to the reviewing stand. Harris had no idea what was required. Cecilia, she noticed, stood still. The mayor's cape had bright red braid. The council, in various bright-colored outfits, all glittering with braid, buttons, or other adornment, descended one by one from the carriage and bowed before climbing the steps. At least they all were seated.
Now what?
Now the General Secretary, it seemed, had something to say. Long experience of political speeches had Harris ready for long-winded platitudes.
We're here to honor our old friend Lady Cecilia and our new heroes. You saw Captain Serrano in the parade. We now consider her a friend of the same status as Lady Cecilia.
The General Secretary turned to Harris.
Please, accept this as a token of our esteem. Wear it when you visit us, if you will.
It was a small silver button, stamped with the design of a leaping horse.
Thank you.
And now, let us show our visitors and friends the pride of our people.
And he sat down abruptly, leaving Harris no choice but to do the same. Harris blinked. Short and not particularly graceful. Not at all what she expected. But it wasn't her place to expect.
The mast pipes!
Suddenly, they were in motion, and with them an array of drums.
I'm not familiar with the instrument.
Oh, not that many worlds have preserved them.
Harris could understand that. Suppression seemed more reasonable than preservation.
Here we have not only preserved, but developed the four main varieties of pipe that survived the Great Dispersal. For marching bands, we prefer the purely acoustic. Well, there is an amplified variety with a portable power pack.
They seem quite loud enough.
Whoa, but they were battlefield instruments at one time. We find them very effective in riot control.
Harris could imagine that. An amplified piper, or worse, a mass of amplified pipers, could send the average rioter into acoustic shock. Most security services had acoustic weapons, but none that looked or sounded like this. Cecilia leaned past the escort between them.
Isn't it thrilling? I've always loved pipes.
Harris was saved the necessity of answering by the pipes themselves. The pipers marched with a characteristic strut, and despite herself, her toes began to move in rhythm inside her shoes. Behind this group marched what must be, she realized, the entire planetary militia, each unit in its own colors. She had no idea where Onslow and Pettigrate were, but the pride certainly showed. Far to their right, the massed pipes wheeled and marched back, this time nearer the crowd.